From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. High-speed rail, bullet trains, came and went after the great crash of 08 as a centerpiece of Obama stimulus. A string of Republican governors turned down the federal money, afraid their states would be left holding the bag. But California's big plans are still on the rails, with a huge price tag and a big vision. We built the Golden Gate Bridge and Hoover Dam in the Depression, say proponents. It's time for bullet trains. Critics say it's fiscal suicide. This hour on Point, California's high-speed rail and the future of transportation in America. You can join the conversation. Will you cheer California if they build it from San Francisco to L.A.? Or slap your forehead. Is this the time for the big high-speed vision? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today from San Francisco is Amy Standen, reporter for Public Media's KQED. Amy, it's great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Glad to be here.
I can't tell day to day. Is this thing still on? Congress keeps trying to backpedal on federal money. Is it still on at this moment as we speak,
still
Amy,
on
in California?
California. It is. It is. In fact, we're scheduled to break ground on the first stretch of high-speed rail in October 2012. And in fact, we have to because that's the deadline for using the federal stimulus money that's been given to the state. So it looks like there's going to be a stretch, at least train tracks for high-speed rail, starting to get laid at a little later next year.
We have to, you say, though. We know the debate is very hot and furious in California. Paint just the physical vision of this thing for us, Amy, if you would. I mean, how far, how long, it would go from where to where ultimately?
Well, ultimately, I mean, that's the question. What voters approved in 2008 was pretty simple and pretty exciting. It was a 500-mile stretch of rail connecting San Francisco and L.A. that would get you between those two cities in 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Okay.
Which would be pretty fantastic, and you can see why that got a lot of support in the state. What it looks like we're getting, at least initially, is 140 miles of track in the middle of the Central Valley, connecting Fresno and Bakersfield at a cost of $6 billion. It's not really clear when, if ever, we're going to get this longer project that would get you, you know, from one city to the next in this very short period of time. And that is really where the debate lies. Right,
Fresno to Bakersfield? I mean, this is like, with respect for both towns, this is a long way from San Francisco to L.A. These are two sort of farming towns relatively middle of nowhere in California.
It is. It's been derided as the rail to nowhere, and it's gotten the project a lot of criticism. I mean, the proponents of high-speed rail in California say that this is what you need to do. It's the spine of the system, and it's a place to really try out the technology. The problem is the business plan, is that they are saying that based on the huge success of this initial stretch of railroad, we're going to get enough private investment to finish the route. And there are some real concerns that ridership on that, you know, rail to nowhere, you know, between these two agricultural towns may not quite attract all the investor dollars that the project's going to need.
And of course, I mean, that's just Fresno to Bakersfield, but the proponents of this thing do not want it to stop there. They want it to go San Francisco, L.A., and maybe even much further. Ultimately, give us the basic argument that is made for this, Amy. Governor Jerry Brown and others, solid behind it. What's the basic argument for spending a lot of money right now in tough times for this big high-speed rail initiative?
Well, the basic argument is that California, you know, hey, we're the land of big dreams. That's what the state is all about. We're all about thinking big and thinking on, you know, about the future. The state's expected to add between 30 and 60 million people by the middle of this century. How are they going to get between San Francisco and L.A. through big population centers? There's also the fact that the airports can't really be expanded in either city because they're already sort of hemmed in by either water or people. So, you know, the idea is you've got to think big, you've got to take the long view, and a project like this, while it may seem daunting and impossible now, is in a sense inevitable.
And the big argument against high-speed rail, bullet trains for California?
Is that we can't afford it. I mean, this comes at a time when we're tripling tuitions at the state's big public universities and at a time when the existing transportation, you know, within cities is struggling and underfunded. So why on earth would we take on a project of this scale with very little sense of where the money is going to come from?
The initial cost estimates for this, as I understand it, were somewhere in the $30 billion, $34, $38 yeah. billion dollar range.
Yep.
Then just recently you had a big new report come back, and to be done by the year 2020. The mm-hmm. new report came back this fall, I guess, $98, $99 billion, and 2033. Yep. What the heck? That's a gigantic gap.
It is, and that's exactly when we started to see, you know, just this sort of deluge of criticism for the project, a lot of really harsh editorials in the big state papers and the big national papers. I mean, at the same time, the project, the High Speed Rail Authority, had been really criticized that they were not being realistic about this, that they weren't giving true numbers about cost and about ridership. So, you know, there was some praise when this came out of people saying, you know, at least they're being realistic about how much this thing is going to cost. But those numbers have really scared people. And I think the fact that the project has been pushed back, you know, more than a decade past when it was supposed, when we were sort of told as voters it was going to be completed, I think that, you know, adds a layer of kind of like maybe this isn't a good idea, just because it means so many of the people who voted for it are never going to get to ride this thing. And again, you know, that's a really far off distant date at a time when so many state, you know, really important state programs are desperately struggling right now because of the economy.
Republicans in Washington have been trying to claw back this high-speed rail money from around the country. Might they still do that, take away the money that has been slated for California? Would that end it?
They can't really take away. I mean, as I understand it, you know, the stimulus money has been committed, and that's about $3 billion, I think, for California. That's the money that's going to pay for this first stretch of railroad in the Central Valley. What was sort of up for question, and what I think has actually been, in fact, eliminated, was this larger Obama plan to spend $53 billion over the next 6 years on high-speed rail. That appears to be dead. Of course, you know, what the California officials say is, well, we're not asking for money in 2012. We're not going to start asking for more federal money until 2014. Who knows what will happen then? You know, maybe Obama's in his second term. Maybe there's sort of a new momentum for high-speed rail. But they're really kind of betting on that being the case.
So build a stretch for billions out in the broccoli fields and then wait for the pressure to grow to extend it to the real population centers. Amy Standen with
exactly.
KQED in San Francisco. You're terrific, and I'm grateful to you for being with us today. Thanks for joining us, Amy.
Thanks for having me.
With us now from San Jose, California, is Rod Diridon, Executive Director of the Mineta Transportation Institute at San Jose State University, Chair Emeritus of the California High-Speed Rail Authority Board. Rod, thank you very much for being here.
Tom, nice to be with you.
And with us from Los Angeles is Lisa Schweitzer, professor at the University of Southern California's School of Policy Planning and Development. Her research focuses on transportation and planning. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom.
Rod, how do you make the basic, you know, big headline case for high-speed rail at very high cost for California?
Well, I think Amy made much of the case by her very rational evaluation. You know, when we began the federal highway system, it was begun in a little town in Nebraska. Nobody lived in that town in proportion to their big system, yet they had to begin at some place, and so it began there. And then it gradually expanded out a little bit at a time as the money became available, and now we have a national highway system. The same concept is being used here with the High Speed Rail Authority project in California. Now, but be careful to remember that before you get telephone calls from Fresno, that Fresno has a very large community now, approaching 700,000 people.
Right.
It is connecting with Bakersfield, which is also rapidly growing. And remember, she mentioned the doubling of the state of California in the next 40 years. A lot of that growth is going to go into the Central Valley associated with Bakersfield and Fresno.
So no disrespect to Fresno and Bakersfield, but they're not L.A. and San Francisco. What does it mean
for they're going to get you.
What does it mean for the national transportation picture, Rod, whether or not this happens in California?
Well, it's a start. It begins in, like, Nebraska for the national highway system, and you have to begin at some place. And by getting it started in the Central Valley, where there's rapid growth, we know there's going to be ridership, there's strong support politically for the project, we have an opportunity of building the system relatively economically because there's still quite a bit of open space land, and test it out, learn to operate the system. Undoubtedly, there will be mistakes as you go along with the first of its kind in the United States, and prove to the nation that it will work. It has to begin someplace, and we can't. It's better to begin in the middle of the system, so you can develop a competition for extensions going both north and south into LA South, into San Francisco North, rather than going from one end to the other, where you can only extend in one direction.
Rod, stand by in San Jose. Lisa Schweitzer in Los Angeles. Now, I read you saying that you and your colleagues, you said that coffee shot out of your noses when you saw the initial estimates of the cost with disbelief. They looked way too low to you. Is California realistic now about what it will cost, what it will take to put up high-speed rail?
This is a much better cost estimate, yes. This is
the $98, $99, nearly $100 billion.
That's right. Back in 2008, when Proposition 1A was on the table for funding high-speed rail, I had my students do a cost estimation. I teach students in both civil engineering and urban planning, and their estimates, and their, you know, they didn't use particularly sophisticated methods. They ended up within a range of $85 billion to $110 billion.
Is it worth $100 billion for California to have this fast train from L.A. to San Francisco?
You know, since I'm an academic, I get to waffle on those kinds of answers. But, you know, it really comes down to how, you know, what you value in terms of, you know, what the project has to offer. So, you know, proponents argue that it's going to, you know, take some cars off the road. You know, there'll be far fewer accidents as people, you know, driving out of the Central Valley and into the cities. It'll help, you know, reduce fuel consumption. These are very nice systems all over the world, right? If you actually go out and ride them, these trains are very, very nice.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about high-speed rail in California, the huge debate, the huge money, whether a state that's almost broke will go for broke with a bullet train, big system for the 21st century. Rod Diridon is with us, Chair Emeritus of the California High-Speed Rail Authority Board. He's been a big proponent from the get-go of putting this in for California. Initial estimates, 30-some billion. New estimate, $99 billion, maybe more, and a longer time to do it. But he says by the middle of this next century, California may double its population. This is the green way. This is the efficient, effective way to move Californians around. Lisa Schweitzer joins us from Los Angeles at the University of Southern California. Well, she's been very skeptical of cost estimates so far. Maybe Californians need to think again, she says. Now, Rod, the initial program, as Amy laid it out for us, was San Francisco-LA in 2 hours and 40 minutes. But as things have unfolded and more stops have been added and maybe the speed won't be quite what it was thought, what does that look like now? What's the real speed? What's the real time between those two big destinations at this point, Rod?
Well, Tom, the time hasn't changed. Once the project is completed, the 2 hours and 38 minutes from San Francisco to L.A. would stand up at a 200-plus mile-an-hour train. And, of course, these trains are running at 187 to 220 miles an hour in 30 countries around the world now. In fact, we're the only industrialized country in the world without a high-speed train program, as Lisa suggested. May I go back, though, to the cost estimates, Tom?
Yes, please.
Because they're really being distorted. The original estimates were done very crassly based on standard cost per mile of construction, of standard construction on grade. Those were done by the best engineers in the world, and they were the best estimates they could give. That $33 billion way back in the mid-decade was a guess, the best guesstimate.
But it's a guess the voters voted on.
Well, it was, and of course I supported it based on that too. Now they're coming forward with estimates not based on values of mid 2007 dollar values. This is the latest estimates now are based on 2033 dollar values. So they've been inflated by 30 years of a buying power. And so they're much more realistic in terms of inflation. They're much more realistic in terms of the cost of the funding in terms of interest rates and in terms of the kind of construction that will actually be required.
Well, that's interesting.
Now, let me add one more point, though, Tom, that's really important for you there in Boston.
Yep.
The Northeast Corridor is being estimated now for the Boston, New York, Philadelphia to D.C. high-speed train at $117 billion. 420 miles of high-speed train.
And you're talking real high speed, not just the Acela, which is pretty fast, but you're talking bullet train speed.
No, you're talking about upgrading the Acela to an international high-speed train standard.
Right, right.
That'd be 200-mile-an-hour system. And for 117 miles, it would cost, for 420 miles, it would cost, it's estimated to cost $117 billion.
Yep.
Well, you know, our system is in the same range. We're a little bit longer system, where we have a little more open space land to build through, and the cost is $98 billion. So we're in the ballpark, and you need it there just as badly as we need it in California.
Of course, a lot of people, Republicans are saying the Northeast Corridor is where it should happen. It is the only place it should happen. It's the only place with enough traffic, ridership, density to make it work. Rod, stand by. Lisa, let me come to you on a couple of fronts here. First of all, on the time between San Francisco and Los Angeles, do you buy that it's going to end up being that sweet 2 hours and 38 minutes, or is it getting stretched out as it develops?
It's really hard to say at this point because, you know, projects, it's an enormous project, and they change as they develop, right, with more stations added or rerouting happening. But, you know, as it's laid out now, it's a reasonable estimate.
Okay. Why does it take so long to build? We had the show in China a couple of years ago. We were there when they just put the shovel in the ground for a Shanghai to Beijing high-speed rail. Turn around a couple years later, it was finished. It was done. Now, you're talking, you know, 20 years here. Why? Why so long, Lisa?
California is a very complicated place politically. It's a very complicated place environmentally. And, you know, it just takes a long time to get things built in California anymore. We have long time to environmental approvals. We have to work with communities in different ways than the Chinese government is encumbered to do. So it's just very complicated to get things done here. It takes a long time to build a house in California relative than it does to build a house in Texas.
We've got a lot of questions here, and so do our listeners. I want to begin to bring them in. Rod Diridon is with us from San Jose, Lisa Schweitzer from Los Angeles, Austin, Texas. Lindsay is calling. Hi, Lindsay. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
I totally agree with establishing a transportation system from L.A. to San Francisco. I lived in Europe for a while, and I think besides education, which is a completely different topic, that transportation is something that we're totally behind in the United States, and I totally wish that we were doing, even thinking about doing what California is doing in Texas.
You wish Texas had it as well. Let me ask you, Lindsay, you're there in Austin. You say Europe looked better on education. Here's California. They're struggling to pay for education right now, university level and right on down. They don't know how to cover their pension funds. They've got bankrupt municipalities. Is that the right time to be putting big money into high-speed rail? Is it visionary or foolish?
You know, I see your point, but I still think that this is totally the time to put in high-speed rail. You know, we're always going to be struggling to pay for things, and transportation is something that we shouldn't you know push behind.
Let's get going on it, you say. Lindsay, we've got thanks for calling from Austin. Let's get one from Buffalo, New York. Christine, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I just want to say I completely support starting. Start anywhere. I mean, I'm in Buffalo, and I'd love to spend 2 hours and be in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, I used to live in the San Francisco area and travel to L.A., and we need to have it everywhere. And, you know, we spend billions and billions and hundreds of billions of dollars improving infrastructure in other countries. We spend it bailing banks out. Let's actually spend it on getting ahead, because as of your program yesterday, you know, the Chinese are doing that. And if we'd like to remain where we are, we need to actually make it a priority.
And Christine, are you for it for the convenience, the speed, or for the environmental angle? What's your big motivator?
Actually, my big motivator would definitely be on the environmental angle. I mean, speed's nice and the convenience is nice, but, you know, if I really need to get there, I jump on a plane right now. But I used to travel all over the world, and we really need to change how we actually move around in this country if we're going to actually stay in the top spot.
In the top spot, that's what California is saying. The proponents there are saying anyway. You know, we do big things. We do them bold. Golden Gate Bridge in the Depression. Let's do this now. Michael in Toronto, Canada. Michael, you're on the air.
Yes, Tom. I just wanted to make a point. Every time I hear this high-speed rail, is there not an approach that we can use existing right-of-ways? Can we not improve railway tracks and systems that we already possess to a much higher degree. Forget high-speed rail. There are parts of the United States that would die for a railway track, not to high speed.
Right.
A track with a train on it.
Exactly, and they're talking about shutting Amtrak down in a lot of places. Rod, what about it? Do we really need to go to the bullet train, super high-speed path? What about just sort of fixing up the rails that are there and getting something, I don't know, maybe just double the speed, not triple or quadruple it?
Well, Tom, internationally, they found that high-speed rail, once it gets over about 180 miles an hour, will compete with anything and therefore be profitable. It'll make money after operating and maintenance costs, which then helps you contribute to expanding the system. So you have to reach that nexus point at which you can begin competing with the short-hop airlines and with people who like to drive their cars. So that's why the high speed is being sought. But the caller is right in that you can proceed by what's called incremental upgrades. Now, that's what's happening in the Acela Corridor. You have a train running in the Acela Corridor that'll go 150 miles an hour on currently existing tracks, and that's being gradually upgraded to become a true high-speed train system, which is exactly what we're talking about doing in the Fresno area. By building the 150 miles of high-speed train technology between Bakersfield and north of Fresno, we let the Amtrak train use that, running over 100 miles an hour, and for a period of time, until it can be extended on into Los Angeles and San Francisco, at which time the true high-speed train can begin using it at the 200 miles an hour plus and making a net profit on operations.
We'll look at that. A huge high-speed infrastructure project still on the table in California as it's fallen off in lots of other states around the country. Rod Diridon, Lisa Schweitzer, please stand by. I want to welcome into the conversation from Stanford, California, Alan Enthoven. He's Professor Emeritus of Public and Private Management at Stanford University's Business School, former Assistant Secretary of Defense in the administrations of Presidents Kennedy and Johnson. Alan Enthoven, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Happy to be with you.
We've heard the case, solid case for it, from Rod Diridon. Some questions raised here by Lisa Schweitzer. How do you look at it? You're a Californian with a lot of history to look back on. Are you for or again high-speed rail for your state, Professor Enthoven?
I think it's courting fiscal disaster. There isn't a strong case for it. The case that has been made is based on unreasonably optimistic assumptions about cost and about ridership. There have been false claims about the jobs that would be created, exaggerations about the carbon dioxide that would be saved. Tom, you use the words brave or crazy, it's crazy, and then you use the word boondoggle. Well, I think those words that you used are right. Under realistic assumptions, this would be a big money loser. The voters of California were promised an 800-mile system for $33 billion, and that estimate was given to us probably by based on the work of the same people who gave you the cost estimate for the big dig in Boston.
Yeah.
And as you know, the big dig ended up costing at least 3.5 times as much as it was estimated when they started. Well, and the San Francisco Bay Bridge extension is now looking like it's going to be 5.5 times what it was estimated when they started. Well, these people are now saying 98.5, call it 100 billion. It could perfectly well be 200, 250 billion. There is no reason to have any confidence that the cost escalation will stop at 100 billion. I caution people, don't say 100, say at least 100, probably more.
Let's dig into some of those projections, if we may. I mean, first, just on ridership. That's very important here because we haven't fully come to this yet, but a big part of the financing plan is to bring in private money, private investment on the back of public to make this thing go. That, of course, presumably depends on making a profit. Now, many people are projecting big population increases for California, Alan Enthoven. Rod Diridon is saying 30 to 60 million more people in California by mid-century. You would think that that would produce potentially a big ridership for high-speed rail.
I doubt it. I doubt those projections.
Why?
Well, I didn't
California
make that prediction
either. California is not growing so fast anymore. In fact, as Lisa mentioned, our system of government has made it so complicated to start a business or build a house that businesses are not coming to California anymore. They're going elsewhere. our business and tax environment are very unfavorable, and I think there just isn't going to be that kind of growth. That's thing one. Thing two is the kind of population growth we will have is going to be relatively poorly or uneducated people from Latin America who, when they initially arrive, maybe it'll be different with their children, or could be, but they will not have the earning power to pay for the high costs of the train, which brings me to the third question, which is education. What we are doing now is drastically cutting back and underfunding education in this state, which I think is a tragedy because I think that's very important for our future. We're cutting back the funding for the universities and for the K through 12 and the pre-K. And if we care about our future and care about economic development, the first backbone for all of that is education, and we're sacrificing that for this pipe dream.
Lisa Schweitzer, how do you see the ridership question? This is crucial on whether or not this thing can pay for itself. Do you buy the projections that are out there now on how many Californians would actually get on these trains?
I think we have a real set of concerns here in California about, you know, we have population projections that we can only base on prior growth. And you know, forecasts are forecasts, and we don't know actually what's going to happen in the future. You know, the state's economy, it's struggling, and that's fair to say. And the longer that continues, the longer it's going to take us to sort of start growing in population. One of the big ticket questions here really do come down to these cost estimates and the ridership forecasts, right? Because both of them are very difficult to
right.
do. The ridership forecasts in particular, because we don't have anything comparable in the United States. We have forecasts from around the world, but it's not the same as in the U.S. But we absolutely have to get those to a point. We have to have both the cost estimates and the ridership forecasts done as well and as professionally as possible. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to get anybody to buy our bonds, right? We're not going to be able to convince businesses to come on board with this. And the construction costs are a big part of that, simply because if the costs do start to spiral, right, what the state is going to have to demand in terms of franchise fees of private investors is going to get a lot higher. And that means that the ticket costs have to go up, and there's just a whole bunch of really hard-to-control factors there. So that the better we are and the more disciplined we are about trying to figure out what the costs and the riderships are really going to be, the better off we are in terms of being able to have a realistic conversation about bringing investors in.
Rod Dyrdon, that is not easy to do. It sounds great. It would be great to have. But how do you assess the risk of this sinking California fiscally if you're off on those numbers?
Well, let's first of all remember that the funds that we're expending now can't be used for anything else. The high-speed rail funds that have been granted to us by the federal government can be used for high-speed rail, or if we don't use them in the time frame required by the end of September, they're given back to the federal government, and the federal government will sequester them back into the Department of
Transportation. I mean, they're big, they're billions, but they're peanuts compared to the ultimate cost. The ultimate costs are the question here.
But the ultimate costs are not going to be expended and unless the original project has enough success so that the people will appreciate it and support it.
You mean you might end up with just a Fresno-Bakersfield high-speed train and that's it?
Well, but remember that high-speed train will be similar to your Acela, and it will be connecting in an area where that growth that we talked about earlier, and by the way, I didn't. Mm-hmm. Amy was the one that gave you the growth projections.
Pardon me. Do you agree with them, though, the doubling?
Well, I believe that we're going to double in population up to about 60 billion from 38 billion currently.
Yep,
yep. That's what the State Department of Finance is saying. But we have to remember that the funds can't be used for education. They're bond funds that are going to be paid off over 30 years at the best interest rates in the world right now. California is still AAA, and so it isn't going to affect the next two or three state budgets.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about high-speed rail, bullet trains, and California, the huge debate, the huge money, whether a state that's almost broke, define that as you will, but they're up against it, will go for broke for a bullet train. It's very active in California right now, a big debate going on there. For right now, it's happening. Just how big, how much money, how long it's going to run, how fast it will run, all that down the road to finally, ultimately know. But the push is on right now as some other states have stepped away. Lots of response online here. Allison comes to the defense of the big dig in Boston. It cost a lot, but she says it's made a huge difference for Boston. Michigan writes here, gas is going to be prohibitively expensive down the road. High-speed rail isn't just visionary. It will be an absolute necessity. He says the project may be a near backbreaker for California in the short run, but the state will benefit massively from high-speed rail in the long run. Ellen writes, she's just been in Shanghai on the very high-speed rail there. Amazing, she says, but incredibly expensive. We've got Rod Diridon with us this hour. He's a chair emeritus of the California High-Speed Rail Authority Board, now at San Jose State University. Lisa Schweitzer is with us at the University of Southern California. Alan Entevin with us from Stanford University, professor emeritus there. Horace is calling from Boston. Horace, thanks. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I think that the problem with high-speed rail is you're sinking all this money into a system which is really inflexible, and as hard as it is to estimate the costs of the high-speed rail program in terms of the construction, the predictions of the ridership are even harder. I think if you look at examples like the recent example of Taiwan, which has one of the most expensive high-speed rail programs, their construction project was done on time, on schedule. Their safety record was excellent, and they're running the trains wonderfully. The problem is that it took so long to build the system that by the time it was completed, the whole demographics of the country had changed, and the people they were counting on to ride on the train weren't riding on it anymore. In addition, I think that the infrastructure on both ends of the high-speed rail also have to be highly developed because people get off the train and they have to go someplace else. If you have very poor or inadequate transportation on both ends, like public transportation, that is, because people aren't driving their cars as they normally would have.
Then how do they get around? I mean, that's why people push the Northeast Corridor, because you've got subway systems in a lot of big cities in the Northeast, but you don't have as much as you might like to have in L.A., certainly, maybe in San Francisco. Let us pick it up, Horace. I appreciate your call. Alan Entevin, you know, Rod Diridon says, well, we'll build this first bit, and if it doesn't get the ridership we expect, we can pull back here. So we'll take it step at a time and let it prove itself out. What do you say to that, Alan?
There's no way that it's going to, the first segment of 130 miles is going to go between nowhere and nowhere. There's no way that it's going to prove itself out. The whole proposition was on big centers like from San Francisco to L.A. I think the recent callers talking about China should remember that the Chinese had a catastrophic accident with a lot of people killed. They cut a lot of corners. Now they have actually stopped funding for their high-speed rail. They've kind of laid off a lot of people. So that has not been a success. And with Rod Diridon on education coming out of a different budget, that's not true with respect to the debt service. California taxpayers will have to service that debt. On the ridership, in July of this year, Amtrak's vice president for high-speed rail opined that an enhanced Acela service would attract 18 million passengers on the northeast corner when it opened. In California, with a similar population and much less favorable circumstances from the point of view of local access to transportation networks, they're saying 39 million by 2030. I think it's just completely unrealistic. It's just as likely that there would be something like 10 million riders by 2030. As the previous caller said, you know, demographics move around and so forth. I just think these ridership estimates are wildly unrealistic. They just don't stand up to common sense. They don't sit with what happens elsewhere.
Lisa, what about the concern that at the end of the high-speed rail train, let's say to Los Angeles, you step off the wonderful bullet train and you're in a city that has very little public transportation, so it's hard for people to get around. Is that an insoluble problem for high-speed rail, or is there a solution out there, Lisa?
It really depends on what, in particular with the California proposal, it will really depend on where we end up with Los Angeles and San Francisco. Los Angeles does actually have quite a bit of public transit. It's not always obvious to people from the outside because we're not heavily rail-based yet. Mm-hmm. But there are very aggressive plans to build a lot more rail. I, for example, don't know how to drive a car, and I don't have a driver's license, and I live in L.A. perfectly fine.
Okay.
So it's one of those things that, you know, it's a myth about California. The other thing is that it's not completely off the table that you could, in fact, rent a car or you could use a car subscription service at the end of your trip here if you were really daunted by using public transportation. But the caller is in general right. I don't mean to dismiss the point, is that you do really want to have the connections working really well on both ends. And that comes down to, in you know, San Francisco, where is the station really going to be in San Francisco? Is it really going to be at the terminal that we're suggesting now, or is it going to be at another BART station? And the same thing is true in L.A. Are we really going to be able to get it into Union Station, or are we going to have to sort of think about more peripheral points?
I'll bring that to you, Rod. Let me get one more call here first. Virginia Beach, Virginia, Jeremy's calling. Hi, Jeremy. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Here's a concern that most haven't brought up yet is the geographical aspect of it. You have earthquakes happening. What's easier to get off of in a safer environment, a 65-mile-an-hour moving bus or a 200-mile-an-hour bullet train? And each little shutter, you got to think of those tracks. One little kink goes out. I'm sure they have sensors. But, you know, the safety aspect of it, if they're trying to attract more, they already have the density for it. If they're trying to attract more, that's something that I wouldn't put my money into, and clearly they're looking for private investors. And with this, you'd have to ease their mind and their comfort, because the way things are going, you got Northwest with the volcano doing some funny things, earthquakes all around.
Yeah, yeah. No, Jeremy, I understand the question. It's an obvious concern with California, at least from a distance. Rod picked that up. I mean, you're going to build a $100 billion train and have it fall off into the sea, or just, you know, have a little tremor that puts it off by a few millimeters. High-speed rail is what requires a lot of precision in its track. What about the quake threat in high-speed rail, Rod?
Well, Tom, the advantage of coming last, and we are last in the world on this subject, unfortunately, is that everybody else has solved the problem. The Japanese just went through the experience with the earthquake and tsunami, and not one person was injured on a high-speed train, although there were several high-speed trains operating within the area.
And they're even more quake-prone than California.
That's exactly right, because they've developed what's called a P-wave sensor system built into the high-speed and other rail technology that stops the trains when the energy preceding an earthquake is sensed by these P-wave sensors. So that's worked out. We don't have to worry about that. But let me mention something that I think you mentioned a moment ago, that other states were pulling away from high-speed investments. Only two states have really taken their money out of the high-speed train program.
Well,
Florida and Ohio.
Right.
Wisconsin came back and asked for their money back. And, of course, the money had been reallocated. They got a little bit back, but the money had been reallocated, a lot of it to California and the Northeast Corridor. So there are 33 states in the nation currently receiving high-speed rail money. 11 of those states, the governors are Republicans. So it isn't a partisan issue. It's really an issue of mobility and jobs. Remember, we're in the middle of a recession, and FDR told us how to get out of those kinds of problems by building our way out, and I think President Obama is attempting to do that now by investing in a program that's going to be useful for the next 100 years for America.
Is there just a fundamental attitude issue here? I mean, you hear Alan Entevin's serious warning that, you know, you could sink the state fiscally. You could take away the very funds that will be needed to create kind of educated workforce that will have the money to ride on this. On the other hand, you've got what seems like a more, call it optimistic, call it rosy view that, you know, bring it on and this will be part of what makes California great. Is there a fundamental attitude divide between the pro and con here, Rod?
You know, I've known Alan for a long time, and I have great respect for him, especially his work with the presidents back in time past. We've got to focus now on what's real. The expenditure of these funds in California isn't going to be for high-speed rail. We're going to amortize the $9 billion of bonds over 30 years at the best interest rates possible. So the annual expenditure to the budget is minuscule compared to the other expenses to the state of California.
But that's just the opening tranche of this.
Let's go back, though, and remember that by spending $2.7 billion of California money spread out over 30 years, we're able to be on the table and competing for almost $100 billion worth of construction. Now, I don't think any more of that's going to come from the state of California. I think it's going to come from the federal government, it's going to come from private investments, and it's going to be spread out over the next 30 years. But every time those funds are spent, they're going to be employing hundreds of thousands of people working on this project, all of whom are going to be paying taxes. Those taxes are going to go into the state budget and federal budget, and it's going to be far more than the state of California is going to be expending in tax dollars to support this project.
Lisa, look at the spreadsheet. Do you believe that private capital will come in a massive way to a high-speed rail system in California? Are the returns out there, when they get out their sharp pencils and do the math, are they going to see the returns that will bring in their billions?
No.
Well, how does it work without that? Do you think, will the federal government step up then, or will it just be Californians paying?
Not unless something radically changes at the federal level. I think that in some respects, Rod is a very good spokesperson for the project. He's so good at being able to sort of lay out how wonderful the opportunities are. But, you know, the finances of this are just very, very tricky. And because there's a lot of money on the table, people are concerned about the project. And when you think about the capital costs or the construction costs risks that are associated with it here, private companies really don't have a lot of motivation to jump in until a lot of that risk has been eaten by the public sector.
Yeah.
And so, and then when we talk about turning a profit, when you actually look at what high-speed rail companies around the world, and there are profitable companies, but they have the tendency to be much more diverse than just selling tickets and running the franchise. For example, the Japanese companies that we were talking about just a few minutes ago do a lot of things, like they have commercial centers next to their high-speed rail stations.
Sure.
And, you know, so they're making their money from not just fares and things like that. So it's a much riskier proposition than, you know, oh, if we just spend this amount of money of California taxpayers, then the federal taxpayers are going to jump in and help us, and the private investors are going to come in and save us. I really do think that the more productive conversation to have with California taxpayers, because I do think people can value the project. I think many people believe what many of our callers have said, which is this is a great project and we have to do it. But I think we have to be just very upfront with California taxpayers and say, look, you know, there's a very good chance that we're not going to see much in the way of private interest until we get very deep into the project. And there's every likelihood that things are not going to turn around at the federal level, and we're not going to get more federal billions. So do you want this or not?
Maybe the question for Californians. Chuck in Savannah, Georgia. Chuck, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to bring up the successful funding model South Korea used when they were building their high-speed rail.
Yes.
And that is, they turned their equivalent of their interstate system into a toll system. And that then subsidized the construction of not only high-speed rail, but also metro rail service.
Well, that's interesting. Tax the interstate, tax the petroleum-based, cars and trucks on wheels to build the rail. I mean, maybe that's a way to go. Alan Entevin, let me ask you here. We understand your deep, deep skepticism about all this. But at the same time, California has always kind of been for this country the state that moves forward, that does big things and inspires the country and then ends up, you know, with Silicon Valley and all kinds of great stuff going on. I mean, do you see, you've been around and watching for a while, America was once the country out on the leading edge here. Is there a risk that if we don't figure out some way to do this, this country gets left kind of in the Stone Age, you know, primitive, while the rest of the world rolls ahead in all kinds of infrastructure? Do you fear that, Alan Entevin?
No, I just don't see it at all that way. High-speed trains are not the most modern thing. Airplanes are, and aircraft are getting more fuel-efficient. If the planes that we have on the routes now are not bigger, the airlines can simply bring in bigger planes. The advantages of flying are just too great I just don't see fast trains as being the modern thing.
Rod says the airports are already jammed up and you don't have room to expand the airports in California.
You don't need to expand the airports, just use bigger planes. And many of these other countries, in fact, all of them that have high-speed rail, are subsidized extensively by the taxpayers. And the problem there is we have a federal government and a state government that are far from being able to balance their budgets, and we have taxpayers who are not eager to pay a lot more taxes to support this. In fact, the proposition that was put forth before the voters in 2008 explicitly said that it would be paid for by the riders and not by the taxpayers. And so, which I think is appropriate, because I think there are other important demands which the taxpayers have to meet, particularly education.
Rod, we're going to give you the last word here today. What do you think of the odds that in 2033 we'll be stepping on the high-speed rail in Los Angeles and zipping up to San Francisco in 2 hours and 38 minutes? Do you think this whole thing is going to happen or float away?
Tom, I am hereby officially offering you an invitation to come and join us and honk the horn on the first train. It's going to happen. It has to happen. We can't be the only one right in all of the world with all 33 countries, every industrialized country, rapidly expanding high-speed rail. Remember that even the latest plan, which is the most conservative plan yet developed, shows a very significant annual net profit after operating and maintenance costs of over $2 billion on the most conservative ridership figures. So it needs to happen. We have to have the courage that the FDR had in the Depression and step up and say it's the right thing to do, therefore we shall do it.
Well, the whole country is going to be watching as you roll or don't roll, and we've had a big eye-opening education today. Rod Diridon at San Jose State University, Chair Emeritus of the California High-Speed Rail Authority Board. Rod, thank you very much for being with us today.
Nice to be with you, Tom.
Alan Entevin at Stanford University's Business School. Thank you very much, Mr. Entevin.
Happy to be with you.
And Lisa Schweitzer at the University of Southern California, USC. Lisa, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks.
Listeners, great to have you with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.